Well, Andrew, we're 1 week in the books. Not quite 1 week. We are recording this right before the last game of week one, but we're about 99% of the way in the books here for week one of the 2015 college football season. And I got to tell you, week one did not disappoint. There was a lot of good games. There was a lot of games that teams that were supposed to win won. There was games where teams that were not supposed to win won. There was exciting finishes. There were blowouts. There were everything that you wanted in a first week of the season weekend.
Right. There was even a game where nobody won, I believe.
There was a game where nobody won. Yep. So except for Mother Nature.
Mother Nature won. Mother Nature always wins.
Exactly. But yes, this is, of course, the Fourth and Short podcast. My name is Will Patton, and I am joined by
Andrew Brown.
You can find us online at fourthandshort.com. You can email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us on Facebook simply by searching for Fourth and Short Podcast. Well, Andrew, let's just get right in there. And we're obviously going to talk about both the ACC and the SEC schedules up to this point and how each of those teams fared in the schedule, but there's a few points. We always like to go outside of our box a little bit. You know, we always reel ourselves back in. But we like to go outside of our box and talk about some of the other interesting stories that happened around college football.
Was that a fishing joke, Will? I don't really fish that much, so I don't know if our listeners are also fishermen or avid anglers, as they say, but your fishing humor gets lost on some of our more city folk, our urban listeners, if you will.
I'll check myself next time. But yeah, Andrew, there was a couple of items that you wanted to talk about, and why don't you just get us started off with maybe our good friend up in Happy Valley. Is it happy today?
Well, I don't know who's happy, but I don't think there are many Penn State fans who are very happy. I heard recently, this wasn't on ESPN. It doesn't go on the mainstream sports place. You have to go to places like Deadspin or some of the more out there sports outlets. And there is talk of a seance to try and revive the Joe Paterno corpse so that he can come back and coach, because there is a lot of discontent with James Franklin, and it's not like they have a lot of other coaches that they can go back to. It's basically just either Bill O'Brien, and he's happy in the NFL, or Joe Paterno. And so anyway, I think there is some discontent. Some people are starting to question whether or not the James Franklin train, or helicopter, I guess, was the right way to go. You know, I don't know what to make of this, Will, but Penn State obviously is not going to be, I don't think, a major player this year. Their quarterback continues to underwhelm, and I believe he was what they call a five-star recruit. So this is not supposed to be what's been going on. I don't think they've lost to Temple. This is the first time Temple has beaten Penn State in 60 years.
Since 74.
To 70.
It was 1941 was the last time that Temple beat Penn State.
Wow. So
yeah.
Wow. I don't know. Looking at it, their quarterback didn't have a good day. They didn't really do a lot. They started out early 10-0. They were ahead.
Yeah, Penn State was.
And then they just basically went to sleep. They just shut down and didn't do anything the rest of the game. So I'm really concerned if I was a Penn State fan.
I know the line going into this game was only like 7.5 points.
Huh. Okay.
So, you know, Temple wasn't – it wasn't like some of these games where the non-P5 team is like a 30-point underdog or anything like that. Like it was a relatively evenly matched game going in. But you still don't ever think that a team like Penn State, who's, you know, putting 100,000 people in their stadium, and with the history that they have, and with supposedly a good coach, we keep hearing that James Franklin is a good coach. I just, you know, haven't really ever seen it. You know, we talked about a lot when he was with Vanderbilt in our first season of the show. He was one of our most favorite topics to cover just because of his antics and the fact that for some reason people thought that he was a good coach.
Well, I mean, you have to give him credit what he did at Vandy. He won 9 games there, 2 seasons in a row, something that hadn't been done maybe ever. So you have to give him some credit.
True. But I still didn't – we both of us agreed at the time that – it wasn't necessarily the best hire in the world for Penn State.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I'm not sure it was.
And you're right. He did. But remember, that's also the SEC. Okay, let's get our ducks in a row here. But yeah, it does not look like Penn State is going to have a good season this year. But you never know. They could always turn it around. But things are not so cheery in Happy Valley. But I will have to say they're probably a little bit happier there than they are on the other side of the country in Washington State.
Yes, Pullman, Washington is actually the home of the Cougars of Washington State. And they recently, this past weekend, under the guidance of head coach Mike Leach, were not able to beat Portland State, which is not one of the 50 states of the union. So, you know, it's not a huge
school.
Well,
it's like a territory, right? It's
province, like, maybe.
Can they call themselves a state like Portland? Like that, I think that's like against the law, isn't it?
Well,
like
they do a lot of things out there in Portland that I would say I don't agree with. So I don't want to get into the politics of it, Will. I think that's not what this show is about. But what I do want to say is that there's some trouble. They're in some trouble in Washington State, and I think if you can't beat Portland State, I don't think you're going to be much of a factor in the Pac-12 race. And there was some trouble really in the Pac-12 with Washington State, and then Stanford also lost. So you had some teams that I think you thought would be better than they were really
right.
Not show up. And this is especially embarrassing because this is year 3 for Mike Leach, and last year he just said, hey, this is an aberration, we're getting better, but it doesn't seem like it right now. The results are not on the field. I don't know where you go from here, and I don't know if you can continue much longer. If you have another 3-9 type season, you have to ask yourself, is Mike Leach going to hang around?
I don't know. And, you know, Portland State Vikings, they are an FCS team.
Yeah.
And they were the 33-point underdogs in this game, and they ended up winning 24-17. Washington State had a 10-0 lead at halftime, but it was but Portland State just pulled away in the second half, and it's like they didn't have an answer for anything, and that's very, very surprising when you just any time an FCS team beats a Power 5 conference team, it's very surprising because you know there's a talent gap there. You know, you could take some of the best FCS teams and put them up against some of the worst Power 5 conference teams, and there's going to be a significant talent gap. And then what that means is that it all comes down to what the coaching is and how well the team plays together. And obviously, Washington State is not playing well together if they can't beat somebody that they were they should have. They were probably expecting to have their third team players in the game by the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you schedule these games. Portland State got a check for this game. I don't know what it was, but usually it's like between $300,000 and $500,000 for games like this. So Portland State made money going in there and
just to get beat. That was the idea. Just to get
That's the idea, is just to get beat in those games. And they take it. I know that the team that Georgia played, Louisiana Monroe, they have – this is unreal to me. I was watching that game, and they only have 4 home games this year because they have their – so they the only 4 home games they have are the in-conference home games. All 4 of their out-of-conference games are played on the road, and it's just to get checks. they're getting a check for all four of those road games. I think they made close to $1 million playing in Athens just to get beat. That's the only reason that they were there, is to get beat. But that's some programs, that's how they make their bottom line, is by scheduling those types of games. And you're not supposed to win those games. But Portland State, I guess they just they didn't get the memo. So.
Well, now, I'm not sure, and I have to correct myself. Mike Leach is actually in year four of his contract. So he's been there for, this is his fourth season. He still has 4 years left on his contract, however, and it would cost close to $5 million to fire him. And I'm not sure that Washington is really the bustling athletic department that has the money to put that kind of money into firing somebody. So he might be there another year because of his contract, but still, year four, you expect something better. And Mike Leach, he's been a winner, so it's not like he doesn't know how to win. I'm kind of surprised at this. You like you said, Portland State was paid to come in and get beat, and yet they didn't get beat. They came in and embarrassed the home team, and this is not a way you want to start the season, because it's just like last year at Georgia Tech. Well, you remember Georgia Southern came in and almost beat Georgia Tech, and how the fan base reacted, and it was almost like a pin getting stuck in a balloon. You just deflate the fan base. I imagine right. It's much, much, much worse at Washington State right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So my question – oh, go ahead, Will. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I was going to move on from Washington State, but go ahead if you had
a question. Well, I just want to say my question is, with Washington State fans, are you – still content with Mike Leach? Do you think that he can turn it around? Or do you think that this is kind of the place? Because where do you go? Washington State, it's not like before he got there they were really successful.
Unless you have a pretty good pedigree, like, you know, you had a really good season the year before, or there's reason for promise this year. If you ever lose to an FCS team, I think that's grounds for firing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of those things where If this were later in the season, he'd probably be fired this week. But because it's still week one, you know, you can't fire your coach in week one of the season. If this were week 7 or 8, you would fire your coach for losing this game.
Right. Okay.
So, and I did want to correct myself real quick before we move on about Louisiana Monroe. I was wrong about them having only 4 home games. They have 5 home games, but they also have a 13-game schedule. So it's 5 home games and 8 away games. Hmm. So, which I think is strange that they have a 13-game schedule, but they're not the same as us. They're making bank. Yep. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick before we move into the ACC and the SEC is another. You mentioned it briefly, but another team in the Pac-12 that was supposed to make a lot of noise this year, and that was Stanford.
Right.
And they lost to Northwestern, and they didn't look really good at all in that game, period.
Right. Offensively, it was a big, big struggle for them.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people had them as kind of a Final Four dark horse, and not even a dark horse. A lot of people at ESPN were saying that they thought that they were going to win the Pac-12 and go to the playoffs, but they looked anemic out there. They couldn't do anything. So that's just another example of a team underwhelming. Against not to say that nothing against Northwestern. Northwestern has put together a pretty good program in the past few years, but that's just the type of game that you don't expect to lose. And you know, maybe it could have been that game kicked off at 11 a.m. Central Time, which would have been for the Stanford players, that would have been like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I mean that maybe that had an effect. I mean, maybe they weren't awake yet. You know, that really could have played with them a little bit, but you would have thought that the coaches would have done something to help prepare the players for such an early game in practices or something like that, but they obviously weren't ready. The offense was not there, and that's another team where you wonder, are they going to be able to rebound for the rest of the season? Because they haven't even gotten into the meat of their schedule, and they already look bad.
Right. I think that this is another example that we've seen many times where a team has had a great coach who built the foundation for greatness, really, and leaves, goes somewhere else, maybe goes to the NFL or takes a higher profile college job. And instead of starting over or hiring another experienced head coach, they decide to stick within and hire a top assistant, bring the top assistant and let him just kind of keep the ball moving with where you are. That way you can have some continuity and recruiting and keep the rest of the staff still there. At Stanford, we all remember Jim Harbaugh built that program. Built it from being a team that couldn't win games, that they hadn't gone to a bowl in several years when Jim Harbaugh got there. And his last year, they went, I think, 11-1 or 12-1, and they beat Virginia Tech in a BCS bowl. And instead of going from somewhere else and hiring a head coach that had already won, they kept his top assistant, David Shaw, promoted him to head coach and let him take over. In the first couple years, it seemed successful. He went 11-2 and 11-2 in his first 2 years. Last year, a little bit of a downtick and went 8-5. And then this year, you start out the season with I'm going to be honest, I call it an embarrassing loss. Nothing against Northwestern, but Stanford should have won this game. Really, they should have. So my question then becomes, is this another example? We've seen this before. You look at the University of Miami when Butch Davis left and they hired Larry Coker to take over. He wins a national title in his first year there. But over time, just can't keep the ball moving at that high level. I mean, he's never had that kind of experience and just isn't able to bring in the same caliber of players and just run the program. And at the end, you look at where Miami is now, still recovering from that, among other things that brought them where they are. West Virginia is another example. Rich Rodriguez takes West Virginia to a bunch of BCS bowls, leaves and goes to Michigan. They hire an assistant to take over, win a few games the first year and kind of go on a downward tick, and now they're somewhat irrelevant. It's always a very risky proposition hiring an assistant to become the full-time head coach. I mean, Clemson was able to do it successfully with Dabo Swinney, so there is precedent of that happening. I think that this is what we're seeing. Stanford is going to either stick with David Shaw and kind of comfortably nestle themselves into a 8-4, 9-3 kind of team year in and year out, or they're going to have to make a change. And that would be a tough change to make, but that's kind of where you're at. You're not going to be elite level, unfortunately, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, at least we're in agreement, Will. That rarely happens on the 4th and Short podcast.
At 4thandshort.com. Right. Let's move on to the matchups in the ACC and the SEC. Let's just start in the ACC.
Well, we can start in the ACC. We got to talk about that game on Thursday night. Happened at about 6 o'clock p.m.,
well, Andrew, that was the first one I was going to talk about. North Carolina at South Carolina.
Now,
and
who did
I know
you
what
pick,
you're,
Will?
I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say.
Just tell me. I want to hear for my own satisfaction. Who did you pick to win that game?
I picked North Carolina.
Will, I tried to warn you that was a very risky pick, and I know what you're going to continue to do. South Carolina and Georgia are going to play in a couple weeks. I know who you're going to pick. You know who you're going to pick. And I think you know who I'm going to pick. Right now, I'm 1-0 with the ball coach. I think it's a good pick, Will. You can't ever count out the old ball coach. You can't pick against them. South Carolina finds a way to win. Steve Spurrier out coaches UNC. It's not even close as far as the pedigree of where Spurrier is. He did something with a team, honestly, North Carolina, the better team out there, player-wise. But Spurrier got his team ready to go, and they believed they were going to win. And in the end, they squeaked out of there with a W.
Yeah, I didn't watch this game, but I've read and heard a little bit about it. And from what I've heard is that really neither team looked good out there. North Carolina had a lot of really bad coaching decisions. Even there at the end of the game, when they were kind of going for a game-winning drive, and there was a lot of questionable play calls
right.
that may have cost them the game. They took it out of the running back's hands, who was kind of taking over there at the end, and kind of put it into their quarterback, who couldn't complete a pass. And I think, didn't he end up throwing an interception in the end zone?
Yeah,
close to
Marquise
the end of the game?
Marquise threw three interceptions in the red zone in that game.
Wow.
That's inexcusable. Yeah.
That's inexcusable. And then on the other side, I think what's funny is I heard that South Carolina played a number of different quarterbacks in this game. I saw that, like, if you look at I think the total number of they had something like five different guys back there at one point in time, and not all of them attempted a pass, but there was five different guys back there at quarterback at different points in the game. So, yeah, good. I guess old Spurrier is just, you know, trying everything he can to get as many guys out there as he can.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta test the water, see who can win the game for you. I think the big news here is that Larry Fedora just looked outclassed. He really just didn't look like he knew what he was doing. I think if it's not for maybe having some crazy buyout, like I said at the beginning of the season, I'm not sure Larry Fedora is going to stick around after this year. He just really didn't look like he knew what was going on half the time, made a lot of very questionable coaching decisions, and I think the North Carolina fan base is somewhat over the Larry Fedora era.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. They're always supposed to be good.
Yeah,
and this
right.
is another year where you had people who were saying this is the year that they're going to be back, and they continue to do this every single year. You see people give them lots of respect in the off season, and then they come in and they really don't put anything together. You know, they'll have a few big wins here and there, but ultimately at the end they're not going to be relevant at the end of the season. And maybe they're getting started off a little bit early this year, losing 13-17 to a Gamecocks team that they probably should have won. They should have beaten that
Absolutely,
team.
Yep.
And on paper, you know, just looking at the stat lines, if you ignore the turnovers, the stat lines look a lot better for the Tar Heels than they do for the Gamecocks in terms of completion percentage and just the amount of yards that they received. But at the end of the day, all that doesn't really matter if you can't get into the end zone, and if you throw
right.
interceptions in the red zone.
Right, yeah. Getting the ball up and down the field, if you can't score, is pointless. And I really am concerned I guess I'm not personally concerned, but I just don't think that North Carolina is going to be a factor. They just did not look like they had it together. Now, that being said, I think Gene Chizik did a lot of things. The defense looked a lot better than what we saw from them last year. They were able to make
right.
some stops.
Yeah, the fact that they held South Carolina to just 17 points, how many times did they do that last year?
Yeah.
Like, probably right. none against Power 5 teams. I mean, they were one of the worst defenses in the country last year. And even if South Carolina doesn't have many offensive weapons, that's still something that they were able to hold them to only 17 points.
Right.
So, that is, if you're looking for a positive, that may be it. Okay, let's move on to the next game. A lot of these for this week, we're just going to blow through. But Elon at Wake Forest. Wake Forest wins 41-3. Not really much to talk about there, but Wake Forest, you know, they avoided an embarrassment, and they actually put some points up in the process. So good for them, good for Wake, good wins, good way to start the season. Next game is Alcorn State and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech wins this one 69-6. This was a game, Andrew, that if you look back in the annals of history, this is not the first time that Georgia Tech has beat up on an FCS team. Far from it. But something, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, or, you know, talk me off the hype train, but something felt different about this game than other games where we've just blown somebody out of the water. And it was really those first five drives that we had, the first five possessions, all of them in the first quarter. There was a level of efficiency on offense that I'm not sure that I've ever seen out of a Georgia Tech team. They moved the ball with, you know, just whatever they wanted to do, they did it. And granted, yes, Alcorn State is not the stiffest of competition, but they went 10-3 last year. And there's, you know, there was reason to believe that they would put up a little bit of a fight against this in this game. But in those first five possessions, we looked absolutely unstoppable. The new guys played incredibly well. Patrick Scove, B-back, 70-something yards and three touchdowns, looked really good. Marcus Marshall, man, again, talk me off the hype train, but he looked a lot like Jonathan Dwyer out there. He was quick, explosive, had that extra gear when he got out in open space, that breakaway speed. 184 rushing yards and two touchdowns. That is incredible. I think he averaged something like 23 yards a carry. You know, of course, that's not going to – that he won't be able to keep that up for the whole rest of the season. But it was a very – I mean, for a true freshman, that's a pretty remarkable way to start out your career. A lot of the A-backs looked good. Broderick Stani's obviously completely healthy, and he had a good game. I think he had like 51 yards. Some of the new A-backs looked good too, like Searcy. Who else? The other Marshall, Taekwon Marshall, looked good. And the wide receivers didn't really showcase them too much, but Michael Summers did have a really good catch in the end zone and a pretty much a perfect pass from Justin Thomas. And, of course, Justin Thomas played very good too. He made several very good reads. Had a couple of mistakes with an underthrown pass and then a play where he got sacked where he should have just thrown the ball away. But other than that, the offense looked incredibly good. And then on defense, you know, again, this is not the best barometer for seeing how a team can stack up against another team. But they looked really good. They didn't allow a first down in the first in the first quarter. I believe most of the second stringers were out there when they got their first down. And they ended up scoring six in the game, but the defense looked pretty good the entire time. The second stream offense looked good too. Same thing with the third. Good win, good way to start the season. Not a whole lot we can take away just given the level of competition. I think we'll know a little bit more next week when we play Tulane. But good way to start out the season, and, it could have been worse, I guess. Do you have any extra thoughts?
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, Will, and it's something that we don't really know everything at this point. We've seen it before, the first game. You're right, it does feel different. I think quarterback play was great. A-backs, B-backs looked good. We've got some good players out there. I think the big key is there are a lot of playmakers and a lot of downfield blocking that look great. So you have people that can block.
Absolutely, yeah. And the offensive line, didn't even talk about them. The offensive line looked really, really good. They Shamir Devine, the new right guard that's replacing Shaq Mason, they left him in for a lot longer. They left him on the field pretty much though the entire first half, even after the rest of the first string offensive lineman came out of the game. And I think it was more or less just to see if he could, stamina-wise, stay in the game. And I think, you know, my guess is that he kind of passed that test because he was out there every single snap until close to the end of the first half. Now, there wasn't any long sustained drives that he had to be out there. I think most of the drives were five or six plays. But that is good to see him out there. A couple of other things that I noticed just from some of the post-game stuff and then just watching the game on TV. And it has to do with Justin Thomas and not just his ability on the field, but what a student of the game he is and how football smart he's really becoming. One of the things that I noticed is that after his touchdown pass to Michael Summers on the sideline, they came back from the commercial break and they had the camera on him, and he was he had a marker in hand, and he was on a dry erase board, and he was drawing out a play and like showing it to some of the wide receivers, like kind of coaching them up, you know, during the play. And it was really interesting to see him doing that. It really shows some leadership and understanding of what is going on, and it was really interesting to see him do that. And then after the game, in the post game, when they asked him about what he saw, his answer was very, very similar to what Paul Johnson said about how they need to, you know, they were happy with where they were, but they needed to go into the tape and look for mistakes that may have been made, and, you know, look for ways to improve, which is very similar to what Paul Johnson said. He's obviously learned a lot from Paul Johnson. You know, if he doesn't make it in the pros, I bet that he would be a really good football coach somewhere someday, because it sounds like he really has an understanding, not just of what he individually is doing, but what everybody on the field has got to do for a play to work properly. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very encouraging. That's what you want out of your starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. He's a leader, and I think that's going to be huge for this season, because there is a lot of new talent or new blood out there on offense in the skill positions, and Justin Thomas has to be the one who takes charge and is a leader, and it shows that he does have that ability. I think that the next couple games, we'll see kind of the same thing next week against Tulane, in my opinion, and then we've got a big test against Notre Dame, which mm-hmm. I think is going to be a close game. It'll be a battle, but I think that there's enough talent on the team to make it a game.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on. Next game is Duke at Tulane. Speaking of Tulane, Duke, they looked fine in this one. They won 37-7. Tulane didn't really put much of a fight in their own house. So hopefully, you know, hopefully for Duke, they're answering some of the questions that they had in the offseason, especially the quarterback position. But Tulane, you know, it's hard to. It's again, even though Tulane is a, you know, they're a I guess a FBS. They're not Power Five, but they are in the FBS. It, you know, hard to gauge, but still, anytime you win 37-7, you can't complain about that. So good
right.
win for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next game is Rhode Island at Syracuse. Syracuse did really good. I think they allowed less than 100 yards of total offense, and they won that one 47-0. So they pitched a shutout there in the Carrier Dome. You know, there's no air conditioner there, so
it's humid. It's very humid there.
It's very humid. So yeah. Maybe that threw Rhode Island off. I don't know. Okay, let's move to Saturday. Wofford at Clemson was a noon kickoff. Clemson won 49-10. Looked good. Deshaun Watson looked good. Had almost 200 yards passing while he was in the game. They looked good. One bad thing that happened, scary moment for Clemson. One of their top receivers, Mike Williams, makes a touchdown catch in the back of the end zone. I think this was their first. It was like less than 5 minutes into the game, and as he caught the pass, he was pushed out of bounds, and he went neck first, head first into the goalpost, and went down. And it was pretty scary moment. He did end up breaking one of his vertebrae in his neck, and he's going to be out a couple of months with that. But that's really kind of a blessing, because it could have been so much worse than it ended up being. So they dodged a bullet there in terms of losing a player permanently, but they did lose one of their best wide receivers in the first game of the season. So that's a big loss for them. But it's just a good thing that he is okay. But Clemson did look pretty good in this one, and they walk away with the win 49-10. Anything else to add on that one?
Yeah, I think that this is good for Clemson. You know, they've got the new offensive coordinator in there. Mm-hmm. I think you needed to come out there and let Deshaun Watson run the game for a while, throw some passes, get comfortable, ready to go. I think this is just a good tune-up to get him going for the season. That's about all it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. The next one was Maine and Boston College. Boston College wins this one pretty comfortably, 24-3. You probably want them to score a few more points in this game, but can't complain too much, and they walk away with a good win. The next game, this one was a little bit close. Not a whole lot of defense in this one, but Pittsburgh and Youngstown State, 45-37, high scoring game in this one.
Well, I was concerned, honestly. I think I talked about this. Hopefully, I talked about it in the first episode. I felt like Pittsburgh was going to be a lot better team, and I felt like their defense.
Their defense, yeah, because of Pat Narduzzi.
Right. Well, I'm not so sure about that now. I've got my head scratching moment here. I'm giving up 37 points to Youngstown State. I just don't see how that's possible. And getting into a shootout with them, it wasn't like the defense at Pittsburgh was terrible last year. So I'm not sure what's going on at Pitt. Maybe this is just one of these early season trying to get together, and this doesn't mean anything. You just never know. You just don't. I mean, sometimes at the beginning of the season, a new coach comes in, and you're still trying to work out the system, trying to learn what you're supposed to do and learn your assignments. I think they're going to get better, but at the same time, it might be indicative of how the defense is going to play this year, and it might be kind of a tough go of it, and it's a good thing they have a lot of great offensive skill players because they might get into some shootouts this year.
And they, you know, James Conner is someone that we always talk about, the great running back there at Pittsburgh, and they've obviously identified another one, Quadre Allison, who had over 200 yards rushing and a touchdown. And that's a good thing, Andrew, because during the game, James Conner went down with an injury, tore his MCL, and is listed out for the season. We'll have to have surgery for that one. Not as bad as tearing your ACL, but still a very devastating injury and something that Pittsburgh is going to have to get over. Hopefully one of their young backs can step up and fill his shoes, but those are some pretty big shoes to fill. So we'll have to watch and see how they react going forward with that situation.
Right.
Next game is Virginia at UCLA. This one was one that Virginia never really had a chance in this game. But, you know, they kept it close
for
a little bit. It looked like for a while that they were going to make a real game out of it. But in the second half, UCLA really pulled away, and it was just obvious that they were the better team in this one. They ended up winning 34-16. But give credit to Virginia, because they put up a fight in a game that nobody really gave them a chance to win. So now they got another big test next week. They played Notre Dame, so they got to turn right around and prepare for another top 15 team. So they definitely took a tough draw early, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this was no surprise. Nobody expects Virginia to do much, but they did look good for a little bit.
Yeah, that's all I can say about it, Will. I agree.
Okay, next game. This one ended up being a really good game. Louisville and Auburn, this one was in the Georgia Dome, the Chick-fil-A kickoff game. And it did not look good at all early for Louisville. First play of the game, there's an interception. It was run back to like the 26-yard line. And Auburn, they get the ball in the short field, and they, you know, five plays later, they have a touchdown. And then later in the second quarter, there's a fumble, and they pick up the fumble, and they run it back for a touchdown. They had a field goal a few minutes later. It's 17-0 at the half. They open up the second half, and Auburn has a nice long drive, and they score another touchdown, and it's 24-0. Fairly early in the third quarter. This looks like it's going to be a total blowout. And then Louisville starts chipping away. They get a field goal. They get a touchdown. And then Auburn scores another touchdown. And then they get two back-to-back touchdowns, a nice long drives Louisville does. And all of a sudden, it's 24-31. And then things get really interesting. At that point, they still had some timeouts, but right before they scored their last touchdown, Louisville, but they they blew two timeouts in their last. I think it was in their last drive. I know they used one of their timeouts to prevent a delay of game. So they scored a touchdown with 3 minutes left. They go for the onside kick and don't get it. So they have one timeout, less than 3 minutes left in the game. And it looks like they're going to force Auburn to go three and out. There's a holding penalty. And the clock is going to restart. But the TV guy's got it totally wrong. I don't know if you watched it on TV. But the TV guys were yelling at Petrino for calling a timeout after the penalty. Because it looked like the clock, they thought the clock wasn't going to start back at all. And they were giving him a really hard time for calling a timeout when the clock was not going to start. But they were wrong. The clock was going to start, but it was going to start with 25 seconds left instead of the normal 40. So he called the timeout at the wrong time. He called it after the penalty on third down. They ran a play, which left about 2 seconds left in the game once they snapped the ball because they were able to – the clock just ran. And they ended up – on fourth down, they didn't have to punt it or anything. They just dropped back and then just basically threw a deep pass that was – you know, went incomplete and finished the game. But it was really bizarre how the game ended just because it just seemed like Petrino just wasted his timeouts. Because I really think if they would have gotten the ball with maybe a minute left in the game
– they could have won.
I think they could have definitely won. Absolutely. They had Auburn on their heels. Auburn, they won this game 31-24. They did not look like a top 10 team whatsoever. Their offense was pretty anemic for the most part. They only had 327 yards. They had three turnovers. I mean, they did not look good in this game, period. It was really just, I think they won because of kind of a poor start by Louisville to start the game and bad coaching at the end. A misuse of timeouts at the end of the game when they had a chance to win it and they just wasted all their timeouts. So this is a game, I think, for Louisville, a real lost opportunity. And for Auburn, I think this is a game you need to forget about this one pretty quick because, you know, Louisville, they're not a bad team, but I would categorize them as kind of a middle-of-the-road ACC team. And Auburn's got a lot more tough games left to play. And if they play like this against LSU or Alabama or Texas A&M or Georgia, they're going to lose some games this year. So
yeah,
I
agree. And Will, also, you got to think about this. Last year, same kind of thing. Auburn went to Kansas State, barely won. People were still talking about Auburn being a playoff contender, not really even just basically greasing over that they barely beat Kansas State and talking about, oh, they're great, this is a tough game. And then they go and lose a couple games. I think you're going to see the same kind of thing. They're going to get to the meat of their schedule. They can't get through all of these. This just isn't that great of a team. They're not bad, but I think Auburn is not as good as the pundits would have you believe. Don't buy the hype.
Right. Yeah, well, but this will be a game that, or a team that we'll just have to monitor from here on out. You know, they're going to get a little bit lighter in their schedule before it gets tougher. But still, this is someone that we need to watch and hopefully for them they can get it back together because they just didn't look good. They didn't have that offense like they're supposed to have there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next game. I think the rest of the games in the ACC are going to go pretty quick. Bethune-Cookman, Miami. Miami, they won big, 45-0. Brad Kaya looked pretty good out there. Cookman had less than 100 yards total on the day. I think they had 70 or 80-something yards total. So not a very good team there, but Miami took care of business, 45-0. Good for them. Next game was Troy at NC State. NC State wins 49-21. Brissett had a good game, almost 200 yards passing. I really do think NC State's going to be good. Next one was Texas State at Florida State. Maybe you can speak a little bit more about this one. 59-16. What did you see out of the Seminoles in this game?
Well, I think this is just the same as most of these other games. Well, you don't learn a whole lot about the team in this type of game. It's destined to be a blowout. Early in the game, there were some wrinkles, I guess, and Texas State had a fake punt for a first down and went down and scored, and then Florida State muffed a punt again and gave the ball right back to Texas State. So early on, there was just some early season jitters. But, I mean, there's kind of nothing to see here. Everett Golson looked good, just like you would expect, but he had all day to throw. I mean, if you can sit back in the pocket forever and there's no pressure coming from the defense, you're going to be able to pick him apart, and that's kind of what happened. So I don't think we've learned a lot. Everett Golson's problem is, you know, when he got into trouble, you know, he made some bad decisions. So we'll just still have to see. The jury's kind of out, see if he's been able to correct that and hold on to the ball. But we have to wait until we see something from a little bit better competition. No disrespect to Texas State.
Yeah, a lot of no disrespecting here. I mean, this is a week where teams are playing kind of the quote-unquote cupcake teams, but these are football teams, and they practice, and they are good. It's just that it's just a different level of competition. So
right.
You have a lot of people that argue that maybe teams should not play these games anymore. I mean, I kind of, in a sense, agree with that. I don't know if there's much of a reason to play these FCS teams. They're really not much more than scrimmages, but these teams do benefit from playing these games. Texas State got a check, just like Bethune-Cookman and Alcorn State and, you know, ULM and Maine and Wofford. Like, all these teams, that's how they meet their budget, is by playing in these games. So, no disrespect to any of them, but you shouldn't lose, and you really can't learn much from playing those games.
Right.
Okay, let's move to the SEC. The first one on the books, besides the ones that we've already talked about, Thursday night, this was a fun one. Western Kentucky at Vanderbilt.
It wasn't fun if you were a Vanderbilt fan.
No. And when we say no disrespect to some of these smaller teams, Western Kentucky has had some good programs of late.
Right.
They put together some really good teams, and they put up a really good fight against Vanderbilt. They ended up winning this one 14-12. Ooh. I watched the end of this one. Vandy scores a touchdown with just a handful of seconds left in the game, and they have to go for two to force overtime, and they couldn't do it. They ended up about a yard short of the end zone, and they completed the pass. It was like a little screen pass, and couldn't get it in the end zone. They end up losing the game 14-12. Not a good way to start out the season if you're a Commodore fan.
I think earlier on I said this would be a game that I probably shouldn't pick Vandy.
I know, and both of us picked this game. So, whoops. I guess we were wrong on that one.
Yeah, I gave a little bit too much credit. Those three letters, SEC, you know, you think Vanderbilt has to win it, but obviously not.
Right. Let's see. Next game on the schedule, Louisiana Monroe at Georgia. This game was shortened due to lightning. There was a lightning delay in the third quarter, and there's about an hour-long delay. They got started back up again and felt like they played for about maybe 30 minutes, and then there was another lightning delay, and they just both coaches ended up just deciding to call it quits. But UGA won 51-14. Chubb looked really good. There was, you know, he looked just like he did last year, dominating the, you know, with all of his carries. He had 120 yards and two touchdowns. Grayson Lambert looked pretty good while he was out there. He went 8-for-12, 141 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Not much to complain about in terms of how he performed. I mean, he found his receivers and he made some pretty good reads, and I mean, he looked better than he ever did with Virginia. That's one thing that I noticed. Bryce Ramsey played a little bit too, not as effectively, but he also just wasn't in the game very much. It seemed like they left Lambert out there a long time. I thought they were going to play a little bit more of Bryce Ramsey. Maybe if the game would have gone a little bit longer, we would have seen more of him. But I'm not really sure if there's too much for Georgia to be worried about on the offensive side of the ball. I think that they got the running game because not just Chubb, Sonny Michel, Keith Marshall, all of them looked really good out there running the football. They have a lot of running backs that they can throw in. The offensive line looked good. Wide receivers looked good for the most part. Their defense looked really good. They did allow 14 points, but their defense did look pretty good while they were out there. So good win for Georgia. You know, move on to the next week. You got Vandy next week, which may even be a little bit of an easier test than the Warhawks. But then after that you have South Carolina, and that's your first real test, I think, for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yes, it will be.
Okay. Next game was Tennessee Martin at Ole Miss. This game was an absolute blowout. Ole Miss won 76-3. Not much competition there. And then we had UTEP at Arkansas. Arkansas won 48-13. They're the best six-loss team in the country, Andrew. They're top 25 for a reason.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. After that, we have Southeast Missouri State at Missouri. Missouri wins 34-3. Then you have this one. This one was a little bit more high scoring than I kind of expected, at least on the underdog side. But Bowling Green at Tennessee. Tennessee wins 59-30. I kind of expected the 59, but I didn't really expect the 30. So Bowling Green, this was a neutral site game. This was in Nashville. I don't know if you knew that, but Bowling Green put up 30 points in the first three quarters. So it wasn't necessarily a blowout, but still a good win for Tennessee. You know, a lot of people are expecting good things from them in the SEC East this year. They think that they're going to be very competitive, but yeah, good win for them. Good way to start the season. Anything you want to add for any of those games?
Well, Will, they're back. We all knew it was going to happen, right? They're back.
Yeah, all knew it was going to happen eventually. Yep.
Right.
Okay, next game. This one was one that I had wrong, and this was one of the ones that you picked correctly. Mm-hmm. Arizona State at Texas A&M. I thought Texas or Arizona State was going to be a lot better than they were, but they did not look very good at all, really, against Texas A&M. Texas A&M looked good on offense. They looked good on defense. They put together a pretty good game there. I just did not expect Arizona State to look that anemic against a Texas A&M team that, frankly, I thought was going to have a down year. But they knock off a top 15 team in the first game of the season, and maybe Texas A&M is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the SEC West.
Well, I mean, it could also be that Arizona State isn't as good as people were expecting him to be. I mean, that's always a possibility. This is the same kind of thing. It's humorous. Texas A&M winning a big game at the beginning of last season is what started the whole SEC West thing that went on.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want to call it, but whatever that was the beginning of the SEC West is the best we've ever seen in the history of college football. So I kind of think that they've done it to us again. Here's Texas A&M unranked, and let me tell you, if you don't think it's going to happen, it's about to start in full force. Just wait. The SEC West is the best thing ever, and it's all going to be back at this game. This is what we can say. This is the beginning of it. Texas A&M beating Arizona State.
Remind me, who did they beat last year to start the season?
They beat the old ball coach, Will.
Oh, that's right. They did, didn't they? Oh,
they
goodness.
Did.
I'm sorry to bring that back up. So.
But seriously, think about it. That is what the beginning
was.
Is that Texas A&M won that game, and then somebody beat South Carolina. I think it was Mississippi State, and then they were all ranked in the top five.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're the only two unranked teams out of the West. Was it Mississippi State and Texas A&M? I think everybody else was ranked, right? Can't think of any others in the West that were unranked. So yeah, if Mississippi State, because I'm sure Texas A&M will be ranked after this week.
Oh, of course.
So Mississippi State's got to be close behind them, and then they'll all be ranked, and then they'll all be in the top 10 before you know it. So
it's crazy how that works.
Yeah. Next game was Louisiana Lafayette at Kentucky. Kentucky kind of survived this one, 40-33. I didn't watch this game. I don't really have anything to say about it, but there's a couple of teams in the SEC that are not carrying their weight, that being Vandy and Kentucky. Come on, guy. You're in the SEC. You gotta take care of business in these kind of games.
Yep.
And one team that did not take care of business, and we teased it a little bit in the opener, but McNeese State and LSU, that game didn't happen. Canceled due to lightning. So that one will not be replayed. Very similar to the, I believe it was Idaho and Florida last year, a game that got canceled because of Mother Nature. So that game just didn't happen. It's pretty rare that you see these games just get completely canceled, but it does happen. And I guess McNeese State, I guess they still got their check, but they didn't have to do anything to earn it.
And here's the thing, Will. I don't know that this will happen, but at the end of the season, if LSU is in the discussion for a playoff bid, do you think playing one less game is going to hurt them?
Probably not, because okay. I think most people would, you know, they knew what this game was. It's a tune-up game, and you know, if it was a big out of conference game that got canceled, then maybe people talk about it. But I don't think that there's a discussion point at all about it. It doesn't matter.
Okay. All right.
Next one was New Mexico State and Florida. Florida wins 61-13. Maybe Florida's back. Who knows? What do you think?
Well, yeah, we can definitely chalk that up as Florida's back because they beat outmatched opponent. So definitely, I agree with you, Will. Sure.
Yeah. Next game was Wisconsin and the Crimson Tide. This was played in Jerry's World in Dallas. I thought this game was going to be a little bit closer than it ended up being, but 35-17 was the final. Alabama looked good on offense. Jake Coker looked pretty good back there. 213 yards passing and a touchdown. Good game where people were kind of questioning him a little bit going into it. But he looked good out there. Defense looked pretty good too. And Alabama played like Alabama, and they won 35-17. One thing that was interesting, this was the only game of the entire week in any conference where it was a ranked team versus a ranked team. And
really?
Usually the first week, I feel like there's at least three or four matchups against ranked teams.
Huh.
This was the only one of the entire week, which was really surprising.
I did not know that.
Well, now you know. So, yeah, good for Alabama. They look like Alabama, and they're going to, you know, they're always going to be good, folks. They're always going to look good. So we'll see if it carries on for the rest of the season. Anything else to add?
No, I roll tide, I guess. I don't know that we really can learn a lot about Alabama from this. I mean, they ran the ball really well, but I think that still this is not the same team that they were a few years ago. I still think that they're a little bit away. I don't think this is a national championship team. I might have to eat my words, but I really don't think this is a team that's going to win a national title. I'm not saying that Nick Saban won't ever win another one. I just think that they're a little bit away from being able to do that again.
Yeah, and you know, there's going to be some pandering, of course, to the SEC West as it being the best conference in college football, like there always is. But I think there is going to be a little bit more parity this year in the conference. With Alabama, like you said, I don't think they're quite as good as they've been in previous years. Mm-hmm. Auburn obviously showed some weakness. I still don't buy Arkansas. I'm not really buying Ole Miss, even though they won big. Mississippi State, I'm not really buying. LSU, maybe. LSU may be good, but again, we haven't seen them play yet, so not, you know, what's to say? I think that a lot of these teams might beat up each other a little bit over the course of the season. I don't see one team that really screams to me like this is going to be the team that's going to come out of this division. Of course, can't really see it out of the East either. I do think that, you know, in previous years, there's always been one or two dominant teams in the SEC that we can point our finger and say, yeah, that's the team that's going to be playing a national championship later this year. But I just don't see it this year in the SEC. There's a lot of good teams, but I don't see any great teams yet. We'll wait a little bit longer and see what comes out of it. But I see a lot of good teams, but not really any great teams. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Yeah, you don't see any Ohio States, is what I'm saying. Like, Ohio State, I think you can absolutely point to them and say, yes, they are going to be amazing. But I'm not really seeing that out of any of the teams this year in the SEC. And the last game is Mississippi State at Southern Mississippi. They won 34-16. Not much to say there, but good for them.
Yeah, good for them, I guess. Sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, that does it. Whew. That's one thing about these early weeks is there's a lot of games. Can't wait till conference play, and there's when we have to talk about, maybe 12 or 15 games total. But, man, these early weeks, you got to talk about, what do we go through, like 25 games? Goodness gracious.
About 100, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, that does it for this episode of the Fourth and Short podcast. Thank you for listening. My name, of course, is Will Patton, and I am joined by...
Oh, is that my cue, Will?
That's your cue, yeah.
Andrew Brown.
What? Yeah, we'll edit that out.
You can edit, make it sound like I,
Yeah, I'll make it sound good. this is the Fourth and Short podcast at fourthandshort.com. You can email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com and find us on Facebook simply by searching Fourth and Short Podcast. We don't say it enough, but it confuses a lot of people. It's fourth, not spelled out like, it's fourth with the number four.
Right.
So like you would push like shift, like if you wanted the dollar sign, you would like push shift and four. Just don't push the shift. Just push the four. Fourth, TH and short.
Well, you're intentionally making that confusing, too confusing. This isn't dollar sign and short.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's fourth and short. No, yeah, you got it. You got it. They got it. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will have another episode. We obviously did not cover the Virginia Tech-Ohio State game. We'll talk about that in the next episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.